You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. 2016 has been the second year in a row to have an official Black Women's History Week. The month of March is Women's History Month, and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York entered the last week of the month as a period dedicated to the history of Black women in particular.
There's a long history of Black women's participation in social justice movements, but our next guest says issues facing Black women have often been overlooked and marginalized.
She decided to kick off a series of events highlighting different issues and challenges facing women and girls of color. The series is called Her Dream Deferred, and it's taking place during this last week of March.
Kimberly Crenshaw joins us now. She's creator and coordinator of the Her Dream Deferred Project. She's a law professor at Columbia University and UCLA and director of the Center for Intersectionality and Social Policy Studies. And she's also the executive director of the African American Policy Forum. Kimberly, welcome back to Central Time.
I'm so happy to be back. Thanks.
Why did you decide that now was the right moment to launch Her Dream Deferred?
Well, there had been a range of debates over the last couple of years that dealt with the fact that we don't really have much of a sense of what is happening to women and girls of color in education, in employment, in the criminal justice system. We were a group that helped to coordinate something called Why We Can't Wait, and it was a response to President Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative, which, although was welcomed and important, dealt only with the challenges facing men and boys of color. And we thought that one of the reasons that was the case is that people just don't know what's happening to women and girls of color. And in fact, there are assumptions that girls and women of color are doing okay. The real problem is their sons and their brothers and their fathers. So in both pushing to broaden the scope of intervention on behalf of youth of color in particular, we thought it was also important to have an affirmative opportunity for people to hear about what actually is happening. So this is the decade of the UN Declaration for Afro Descendants, and we thought, well, it is an excellent opportunity to begin a week in Women's History Month that focuses on Afro descendants who are actually women and girls. So, fortunately, Senator Gillibrand was equally convinced that this was an important thing to do. She partnered with us and some of our partners to have this week declared as Black Women's History Week, and that was the beginning.
I mean, here it is 2016. Why do you think it is that there is this missing data when it comes to women and girls of color?
Well, you know, the missing data is just one of many things that falls through the cracks of race and gender as we understand it. So many years ago, I started doing work in this field and paid attention to the fact that the way we think about race and race discrimination usually is predicated on how men experience racism. And the way that we think about gender discrimination tends to be predicated on the way that women who are not also people of color or who are not also queer or are not also a working class experience it. So when you have limited frameworks, it is easy for data to fall through the cracks, for experiences to fall through the cracks. Visibility of the particular ways they experience these issues falls through the cracks. I think a good example of that, to go back to what I was just saying, is that one of the things that the president mandated when he initiated My Brother's Keeper was a command to agencies to produce information, data on the status of men and boys of color as a way of beginning a conversation about what kind of interventions could be brought up to scale to actually make a difference. And that was really important work. What's frustrating about it is that it did not also mandate that data about women and girls of color should also be collected by these agencies. So we don't have as much information as we should have. And because of that, it is sometimes difficult to really create the public will to develop the attention and the kind of interventions that would be necessary to make a difference in their lives as well.
How would you say that the issues and the missing data for women and girls of color is different from men and boys of color?
Well, there are ways in which it's different and also, frankly, ways in which it's the same. So we did a report last year called Black Girls Matter, pushed out of, out of school. And one of the main things we were trying to look at is whether the school-to-prison pipeline actually plays out for girls in the way that it plays out for boys. And we did find that, like boys, girls, black girls in particular, were several times more likely to be suspended, for example, than their white female counterparts. What was different was, first of all, the level, the magnitude of difference between black girls and white girls and black boys and white boys was dramatically greater. Black boys are three times more likely to be suspended than white boys, and that in and of itself is a serious social problem. But black girls are six times more likely to be suspended than their white female counterparts, in some places 10 and 11 times. So there's a sameness in the sense that race is a factor. There's a difference in the sense that for girls, it's far greater. So we wanted to find out, well, what actually is happening. And one of the things that a lot of the young women told us is that black girls are more likely to be seen as having a particular kind of negative attitude. They're more likely to be suspended because they are aggressively engaging in classroom dialogue in a way that teachers interpret as being hostile or as being defiant. So as girls, as women, there are differences in the way that girls who are black or girls who are Latina experience both sexism but also racism. And last but certainly not least is the fact that girls are more likely, of course, to experience sexual harassment. Women are more likely to experience sexual abuse. And the particular consequences of sexual abuse for women and girls who are stereotyped through racial stereotypes as more likely to engage in sex, more likely to do a whole range of things that are risk factors, actually contributes to the deterioration of their well-being. So, yeah, it's both the ways that race creates similar kinds of challenges for people of the same racial background, but also the ways that gender actually shapes and changes those risks in very different ways.
We're talking with Kimberly Crenshaw right now. She's a law professor at UCLA, and she's the coordinator and creator of the Her Dream Deferred event, which focuses on issues facing women and girls of color. And in some of the materials talking about your event, you said that the moment that we're in now is a unique moment because of the social emphasis right now being placed, for instance, on the Black Lives Matter, the awareness and the desire to learn more across big spectrums of people in different areas and disciplines. So what makes this moment unique, would you say?
Well, I think one of the things that makes the moment unique is that we're having a conversation about race again. And that is significant given the fact that for the last 6 or 7 years, for the most part, there's sort of been this belief that race was fading away, that we were in a post-racial moment. And as a consequence, things that we traditionally would talk about as racial problems became talked about as something else, class problems sometimes, or problems in terms of motivation, et cetera. And I think what Black Lives Matter and other activists managed to put back on the table is that race continues to be a significant factor in differentiating the kinds of things that happen to different kinds of people. I think in particular, Black Lives Matter raising the question of police violence against black people in particular actually re-energized a conversation about something that was ongoing but hadn't really been talked about. What also makes this particularly important for those of us who are interested in how women experience race is the way in which even that conversation has to be broadened. So one of our other projects is called Say Her Name, and that is in response to and in coordination with Black Lives Matter as a way of ensuring that when we're talking about Tamir Rice and Eric Eric Garner. We're also talking about Tanisha Anderson and Michelle Cusseau, two black women who were killed within weeks of well-known black men who were killed. But we don't really have them in the conversation because we don't imagine police brutality as something that happens to black people who are women as well as black people who are men. So all of this is made possible because we're having a conversation about race, but we're also trying to broaden and expand the way that we think about race and racism as we move forward to try to create more effective strategies to address some of these problems.
We're talking right now with Kimberly Crenshaw, creator and coordinator of the Her Dream Deferred Project. It's a week-long series highlighting the challenges facing women of color.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What unique challenges do you feel women of color are facing in the United States today? How well do you think they're being addressed, talked about? Are they being talked about at all? How do you see this playing out in your daily life, in the workplace, and at schools with African-American girls, as you're hearing, with much higher suspension rates than their white peers? And if you're an African-American woman yourself, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about all this? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we're picking up our discussion now with Kimberly Crenshaw, the creator and coordinator of the Her Dream Deferred Project. She's a law professor at UCLA and Columbia University. And we're talking about the status of black women in the United States.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're an African-American woman, maybe living here in Wisconsin, what kind of challenges do you see? Do you feel overlooked in the attention to women? Is it focused mostly on white women? And when we talk about race, do people mostly talk about men of color? What do you, whoever you are, think needs to change to help the status of black women and girls in Wisconsin, the United States? How do you see these unique challenges, unique issues playing out in daily lives and maybe in classrooms around the state if you're a teacher? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Kimberly, let's get to another one of the issues that Her Dream Deferred gets at. And this is the perception of black single mothers in our society. Mm. Now, you say that in terms of, you know, the society at large, you know, white single mothers are beginning to be perceived more favorably, but that does not extend necessarily to black single mothers. What are you seeing?
Absolutely. Well, in our session, Standing Up for Mom, resisting the vilification of black single moms, we trace the problem back to the Moynihan Report, which, as some of your listeners likely know, was a report by Daniel Patrick Moynihan that essentially argued that the problems of the black community were never going to be solved by any kind of governmental program or other kinds of structural interventions, as long as the family was so much at odds with the traditional nuclear family. And he pointed his finger specifically at something that he called the black matriarchy, which was this idea that black women were overly aggressive, were taking up the role of men in their families and in their communities, and recommending that one of the ways to fix this problem was to beef up the masculinity of men and boys, engage in military service. These were ideas that were predicated on, as we say, the failure to contest racial discrimination as well as patriarchy or sexism at the same time. Unfortunately, this idea has more or less stretched across the decades, although it was really controversial when he first issued the report. Now there's more of a sense of revisiting his ideas, a sense that, well, maybe, you know, he was right after all. Look at the fact that some of the worst outcomes and most poverty exists among single moms. And our point is that marriage is not necessarily the thing that lifts people out of poverty. There are plenty of two-parent families that are desperately poor. The problem is the economic position of so many women, particularly women of color, who barely make a living wage. One of our reports that was reported on yesterday by Heidi Hartman and her colleagues from the Institution for Women's Policy Research found that reducing the gender wage gap would reduce the poverty rate by more than 40% in the South. So what we're actually looking at is discrimination against women, against low-wage women, and those are disproportionately women of color. That's the problem. It's not the problem that they're matriarchs or the problem, frankly, that they may have chosen to have families without male partners.
Let's get a caller in on this now. We've got Nikki joining us from Elkhorn. Nikki, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to share?
Actually, it's just touching base on the fact that as black girls, we are more likely to be suspended from high school. I graduated from Cudahy High School about 6 years ago, going on now. And one of the issues that I faced was when it came to our dress and the way that we would dress. I would wear shorts to a certain length, and a principal or a vice principal would come up to me and tell me, you know, that I couldn't wear that. But my mother even saw a white girl walking past with shorter shorts on, and nothing was said to her. She was never sent home, never asked to change, but I was. And I was sent home a couple of times for doing that. And again, too, that was something that I found, it wasn't right, it wasn't fair, that we were picked on more because of, you know, being thicker as well, our shorts rise up. Mm-hmm. But being white girls, you know, some things, they look different on different people.
Nikki, I'm so glad you called and shared that. And Kimberly, what goes through your mind when you hear a story like that?
Well, yeah. So we've been doing focus groups across the country, and we've been asking young girls of color precisely that question. And Nikki, you are not alone. Girls in Los Angeles and girls in Philadelphia have been telling us exactly the same thing. They will wear something that is virtually identical to something that one of their white classmates might wear, and they're picked out from the larger group of girls and told they have to go home. They can't wear that. So they've been asking, what is this telling us about our bodies? What is it telling us about what people think about when they see our bodies, such that the same item of clothing on me somehow looks obscene, but the item on someone else looks different? So there is a growing awareness of the fact that this is there's a particular kind of body shame that girls of color are experiencing that other girls are not. Beyond that, of course, is the consequences of being sent home and sometimes even being suspended. So one of the things that we noted is that when girls are suspended, the likelihood of a future suspension is great. The likelihood of disconnection is great. Sometimes certain things happen to girls when they're suspended and not in school during the day because they're not always safe. So these might look like minor kinds of problems, but they often turn into far more significant problems that lead to girls being disconnected from school altogether.
Well, Nikki, thank you so much for calling. And Kimberly, let's touch on another aspect of this I thought was particularly compelling, the story of black women veterans and how there's seems to be systemic inequality in the military and their experience there. What have you found?
Yeah, so we're really, really excited about this conversation because we don't see a lot of it. But this actually is happening tomorrow in our series. So one of the things that I was just stunned to find out is that the data suggests that 1 in 3 women will experience some form of sexual assault while they're serving their country. And that in and of itself should just have us up in arms, that you know, people who are serving our country are, in fact, not being protected while they're actually doing so. But beyond that, we know that many of the same things that happen in broader society when black women are sexually assaulted seem to also be happening in the armed forces, namely the likelihood that they'll not be believed, the higher rate of unfounding, namely saying that we don't think anything happened here, concern and fear. fear about backlash if they actually report a sexual assault, particularly in context in which it's an intra-racial sexual assault. We were just talking about that today in historically black colleges and universities, where some of our participants were black college students who said that they were also pressured not to tell the stories about what happened to them, both because of concerns about making the university or the college look bad, or having a negative consequence on another African-American male, recognizing, of course, that there's been a history of unfair prosecution against men. So we wanted to bring all of these conversations into greater visibility, number one, for women and girls, particularly of color, to know that going into the armed forces might be something that they should really think about and have a plan for maintaining their safety, and also to help put pressure on the armed forces to be more accountable when women and girls have had these, when women have had these experiences.
Kimberly, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Kimberly Crenshaw, the creator and coordinator of the Her Dream Deferred Project. She's also a Columbia Law professor and executive director of the African American Policy Forum. You can find more about the series on the Central Time Facebook page.